Welcome back to God Books, the podcast where we talk to booksellers from all around the world. And welcome to this short Christmas series meant as a mini advent calendar to get you in the holiday spirit. From December 3rd to December 17th, we'll be publishing an episode every Monday and Friday. That's 5 Christmas episodes for you, in which we're bringing back some of the booksellers that we know and love from past episodes, so they can tell us how they're preparing their bookshops for Christmas, what books to get for the special people in our lives, and what they like or maybe don't like so much about the holiday season. Today you can eavesdrop on my conversation with Stephen Fowler, an old friend of ours on God Books who I'm sure you remember from season 1. Stephen runs perhaps one of the quirkiest bookshops in the world called The Monkey's Paw in Toronto. He specializes in odd books dated before 1980, and he's come to share some of the latest additions to his collection on today's episode. His bookshop is also known for his famous Bibliomat, a vending machine that spits out a randomly selected vintage volume in exchange for a token. So if you happen to be in Toronto and you're feeling lucky, pay a visit to the Monkey's Paw and see what the Bibliomat has in store for you. If you're not there though, this conversation is as close as you can get. Hi, Stephen. Welcome back to God Books. Very nice to have you back with us.
Well, thank you for having me. This is so exciting to be back again.
It's very exciting. And this is a very different episode than anything we've done before. So I'm bringing back a few of our past guests, those that have seemingly attracted the most attention. People have listened to the episode with you more than most other episodes we've had so far. So because of that, and not just because of that, I wanted to know what's going on at the Monkey's Paw around Christmas time, around the holiday season.
Well, I'm happy to tell you about that. It is, you know, being in retail, obviously that's the most exciting time of the year for us because we have the highest traffic and people are most enthusiastic about shopping. I like that time of year. I feel like it sounds really trite to say that I'm giving gifts to my customers, but there is an aspect of like a lot of people shop for gifts here. And I love the idea that we are providing gifts that people are giving to their loved ones, to their friends, to their colleagues, whatever. And I know, because the stuff's really hard to find, that the gifts are all special. You know, it's not like, oh, I got you a scented candle. You know, you buy something from here and the person you're getting it for probably doesn't have it already. So that's an exciting time for us. And we do bring out some stuff, sort of categories of products that I save up all year to sort of release at the holidays. One of those that I spent the weekend preparing was an item that might be unique to us. I don't know of anybody else who does it. We call it a graphic salvage pack. Basically, what it is an envelope full of images, prints, illustrations, photographs, printed sheets that we have salvaged from old books that have fallen apart or been damaged in some way and are unsaleable. We go through and take out the really attractive images and we put them together in a pack. It's like a vellum envelope, so you can sort of just see through it a little bit to get just a little idea what's inside. And we put a dozen images in a pack and seal it. So it's a kind of a surprise pack, but we have hand-selected all the images. And all the images, I guess you could say they're sort of like ethically sourced in the sense that we are rescuing them out of books that are otherwise unsaleable. All the images are old, like nothing is probably under half a century old, say 50 years. And a lot of stuff, I mean, the ones I was packing up yesterday, there were plates from the 1860s, 1880s. So old images in a surprise pack, hand-selected by us for total diversity and beauty and interest. It's like an instant gift, you know what I mean? And hand-assembled, and it has the sensibility of the Monkey's Paw because we select the images, so I don't put in stuff that isn't eye-catching enough or it doesn't meet my criteria. So that's the kind of thing, like, we only do that during the holidays. I wish I had one here to show you on the video, actually, so you could see it, because they're really cool, but I was assembling them at home and don't have them here at the shop yet. But I'll be releasing those probably this week. Some people come in and they're like, oh, an envelope full of stuff I can't see. Yeah, right. You know, but the people who have a little bit more imagination or are willing to take a little chance get very excited. And I haven't heard of anybody being disappointed. There's cool stuff in there, you know, and it's exciting to open it and see what's there. And you can mat them or you can cut them up for collage or you can, you know, frame them, whatever you want to do. So that's a special thing we do for the holidays.
That's nice. That's good to know. One of my best friends is going to be in Toronto around Christmas time, so I might send her to you to get me an envelope.
Well, you better come soon because they are limited supply.
Okay. So, well, she arrives on the 22nd of December, so she might be a bit late, no?
Talk to me about it later. Maybe I'll set one aside for her.
Okay. Okay, good. I'll talk to her about it. I wanted to ask you, so what does Christmas or the run-up to Christmas look like in your bookshop? Is it, you know, full of people looking for these kind of original gifts, the one-of-a-kind things they won't find anywhere else? Are there lots of people coming to the Monkey's Paw before Christmas? How can we imagine Christmas in your shop?
Well, so I don't know if this is true with all retailers, but definitely the experience that we have here is I spend basically the autumn getting ready for the holiday season. So buying, pricing stuff, filling up all the shelves, making sure that all the displays are perfect, everything is all ready to go. And I've done that by, say, late November. And then I just sit there and wait, you know, and it's like, where's the holiday rush? And it doesn't seem like it materializes. And it's sort of a, you know, kind of nail biting situation. Oh my God, we went to all this, we invested so much energy and even money into this and nobody's coming. And then there'll be like one day, hopefully it'll be true this year as well. It's true in the past every year. There's one day in December when all of a sudden it's like the switch goes on and the store is just jammed with people from opening until close. You know, we sell books all day long and prints and ephemera and everything, all of our stock. And in, you know, in the period of like a week or two, the shelves are totally stripped. And then I'm sitting here saying like, oh my God, how am I ever going to replace all this stuff? The place is empty. This is not a good bookstore. There's nothing here. So that's what happens usually at Christmas. I hope that the holidays will bring a similar kind of thing this year, honestly. And it's really fun when, you know, when there's that energy in the store, that's great. But it usually means that January is not the best time to visit the Monkey's Paw because I'm struggling to refill the shelves and some sections are completely depleted and we're not like new retail. I can't just call up the distributor and order more. So if I sell out, you know, all of the nature field guides, where am I going to get more? You know, it takes me forever to find that stuff. So anyway, that's what the holidays look like here.
So people should shop, they should consider not taking everything off one of your shelves. Not leaving.
Well, I wouldn't tell people that, but maybe what they should do is spread it out a little bit. Because if you do come here, I mean, there's always some guy who comes here on the 24th of December and says, oh, I need something for my girlfriend. She loves your store. What have you got that she's going to like, you know, and basically all we do is just whatever's near the desk, we just say, how about that? And then he'll take it. And, you know, not the most imaginative shopper, but that's all that's left. He's going to get what he gets. So
I'm going to ask you for a little shopping list in a moment, but for different kinds of people in our lives. But before that, I wanted to ask you, and this is a question I'm going to ask the other booksellers, but in your case, because of the types of books you sell, it might be a little different. But are there some kind of classic best-sold books for Christmas, or are there some categories in your shop that sell better for Christmas?
So yes, I actually went to the trouble to pull out a couple of examples to show you here. Did I? Wait, where did I put them? Oh, they're over here. Okay, so here's some examples of the kinds of things that are popular. And these happen to be books that I don't have all the time, but I sometimes am able to have. So for instance, we sell a lot of nature books. It's Canada. People like their nature here. And a book like this one, which is The Native Trees of Canada, published by the Department of Forestry of the Canadian government. It's a field guide to Canadian trees. And I guess at one time, probably every Canadian family had a copy of this book. And at this point, I've bought all of them and, you know, resold them to new Canadian families, I guess. We'll sell a lot of books like this during the holidays. You know, as I say, Canadians love their nature. And look what a charming book that is. It's got this beautiful mid-century design.
Very nice. Practical guide to nature.
And cookbooks are popular. Here's an example. This is like the most famous North American cookbook, The Joy of Cooking by Irma Rombauer. I don't know how many copies of this I might have stockpiled for the season, but we'll sell all of them, probably. This is an especially old and beautiful one that I have on my desk right now from the 1940s. That is a really, really hard thing to find. The ones from the 60s, I have a little easier time finding, but they're very popular. It's the kind of thing, you know, so that would be an example. And all the cookbooks, I try to keep a good cooking selection, and those are very popular holiday gift items. And then this is another example of the sort of thing we sell. This book is called The Way Things Work. There was actually a second volume of it, and I'm fortunate to have a couple of sets of the two volumes. It's an illustrated encyclopedia of technology. So basically, I think the original edition of this actually was German. I think the illustrations are German, which gives German them extra extra accuracy and perfection. But it's basically an encyclopedia of every kind of technology you can imagine explained in diagrams and in these really excellent, easy to understand, beautiful diagrams. So like if you want to know how a washing machine works, or if you want to know how, you know, the air brakes on a truck work, or you want to know how a water heater works, or whatever, it has everything in it. How a clock works, or how a, and so not to pigeonhole people, but that's a real like boyfriend gift. There'll be a lot of sort of nerdy guys who end up with a set of those books as a gift from a girlfriend or a mom or something. There's no reason there couldn't be nerdy women getting them also.
Of course.
For some reason, I always get, oh, my boyfriend's a real geek for mechanical stuff. Do you have any suggestions? Boom, The Way Things Work. So
yeah,
those are some examples.
I admit, I also just thought now I could get that for my boyfriend, so I could see how that could work. And what are some books that you'll be recommending most as gifts this year? Are there some books that arrived at Monkey's Paw recently that you'll be
recommending? So yes, actually, there's a really good example that I could tell you about. I'm super fortunate to have received, so that at least you can see them while I talk about them. There was a publisher, well, I guess they still exist, but not like they used to. There was a publisher called Peter Pauper Press. They were out of New England, Connecticut or somewhere in the 1950s, 1960s. They specialized in what were at one time sort of disdainfully referred to as gift books in the book trade. And they were gift books. They were intended as things that people would buy for holidays or birthday presents or whatever. But they took a lot of trouble in the like physical presentation of the books. The printing, they're all letterpress printed, beautiful illustrations. And they're short subjects in these uniform small books, just a little bit bigger than a pocket paperback, but they're all hardcover and they're small. And they're all in these great subjects like, you know, there's some cooking ones. You know, here's the ABC of cheese cookery, the ABC of chafing dish cookery, holiday party casseroles, simple Italian cookery. Many, many of them are sort of like folklore and religious traditions. So, you know, Russian fairy tales, the wisdom of India, a Chinese garden of serenity, reflections of a Zen Buddhist, Chinese fairy tales, African folk tales. They just go on and on. The point is, they're just so pretty. African proverbs, oh, or something absurd like the humor of the USSR. That one is a hilarious book with a Russian doll on the cover. Some of them also are literary. The Sonnets of Shakespeare, the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam, poems of Heinrich Heine, Oscar Wilde, Baudelaire, Flowers of Evil, Edgar Allan Poe, Rilke, Whitman. They are gift books, and they were, as I say, I think treated, maybe not taken so seriously by publishers in, you know, 1960 when they were being printed. But today they are these beautiful, beautiful survivors, and people just love them. And I'm super fortunate to have this huge collection of them that I just bought. So I will totally be bringing those out probably this week. And I know they will once again live up to their name as gift books. So that's an example of the kind of thing I'm selling.
Yeah, they're beautiful. I love the USSR humor one. I'm curious what kind of humor. I mean,
exactly. It's frankly absurd, but I don't know. Maybe it's funny. Or if it's not funny, it's even funnier.
It could be funny. I know in Romania and communist times, the humor was so dark that it was excellent, actually. Yeah. maybe it's similar. Great. So you already said these are some of the books you're going to be pushing a little bit more this Christmas. But if we were to make a little shopping list, I have six different personalities here, let's say, where, six different scenarios in which I might be looking for gifts. So if we were to look for a book for a history fanatic uncle, what would you recommend?
Yeah. Well, this one just came in. This is The Mind and Face of Bolshevism.
Okay.
And that is an examination of cultural life in Soviet Russia from 1927. This was a British published book. It's a huge book. I mean, it's like, what is this? Well, it's only about 300 pages long, but the book is just, it's gigantic, and it's heavily illustrated with examples of Soviet graphic art and a lot of photographs of Soviet cultural activities. It was published at a time when the West hadn't made up its mind yet about the Soviet Union. And I think people were curious, like, what's going on there? And so it isn't like one of those Cold War, you know, anti-communist books. It's actually like an attempt to sort of explore, like, what's really happening in Russia right now in this, you know, this crazy communist experiment. It's just a super cool, like, survivor from 1927. So I think if I had an uncle who was interested in 20th century history, that would be an incredible example to show.
Yeah. That could pair nicely with the USSR humor book as well.
Yeah.
Good package. What about for a science-loving niece?
Okay, I've got a really good one for that. This is a book called Fortunes in Formulas. This particular one was printed in 1939. It's an American book. The full title is Fortunes in Formulas for Home, Farm, and Workshop, the Modern Authority for Amateur and Professional, containing up-to-date selected scientific formulas, trade secrets, processes, and money-saving ideas. Basically, it is recipes to make every conceivable type of chemical material. So it includes like adhesives and condiments, paints and dyes, and look at this, shoe dressings. I guess that means like shoe shine stuff. Pyrotechnics, which is, you know, fireworks, polishes. It just goes on and on and on. So I think the theory is, you know, varnishes with this book, if you were a tinkerer and a sort of the kind of person who enjoyed, you know, playing around with a chemistry set, you could make anything. You can make your own toothpaste. You can make your own, you know, perfume. You can make your own glue. You can make whatever. And of course, the title suggests that not only could you make it, you could sell it.
So,
you know, exactly. It has a, you know, you have a future with this book. It's really like you could spend hours and hours and hours looking at the stuff in here. And it's really, you know, no, how do you make your own toothpaste? I think I will. I think that the science-loving niece is going to find that fascinating. I hope.
That's a good one. In my day job, before my maternity leave, I work with chemists who make new materials. So this would be perfect for them. They should.
Right.
They should
know. These are old materials, but
Well, you never know. Maybe one of these recipes has not been tested yet.
it's time to revive them. Yeah.
Exactly. What about a book for our fun-loving cousin?
Okay. So we have a lot of books for a fun-loving cousin. I just grabbed this one kind of offhand here. That's Playboy's Host and Bar book by Thomas Mario, 1971. And
choice.
Obviously Playboy magazine was, you know, in 1971 was a huge cultural force. They had their own book publishing wing, and the Playboy's Host and Bar book would be probably your go-to source for party advice and drink mixing and whatever if you were a 1971 swinger, which I'm assuming you're describing.
Exactly. That's exactly what I had in mind.
So, and especially the fact that it's from 1971, I mean, that just makes it so much sexier than an equivalent book from today, I think.
Definitely.
So,
playing for the vintage factor there. Very good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you know, you can have your swanky pad, your bachelor pad. So that's a thought that you know, and I sell a lot of books like that. So that is a good example of one, but.
Moving from the fun-loving cousin to the grumpy dad, what are we getting for the grumpy dad?
Well, okay, so grumpy dad, I'm figuring that's somebody who's basically misanthropic. He doesn't like people or is suspicious of people or has a low opinion of society. So I just grabbed this one. I mean, who knows what somebody like that's going to like, but this is a reprint of a book that came out in 1886 originally. This is a 1969 reprint, facsimile reproduction of the book, Professional Criminals of America. It was published as a guide for law enforcement with photographs of all these criminals and little biographies. You know, this guy's a safe cracker. This guy's a con man. This guy's a, you know, I don't know, what are they? Pickpocket, burglar, sneak, which I'm not even sure what a sneak is. It sounds bad.
That sounds like a good choice.
So it goes on and on and on. And I think it would just confirm for anyone who's basically misanthropic, it would confirm how horrible people are.
Mm-hmm.
And also at the same time, introduce a little bit of fun to it. Look at all these horrible people, forgers and bank burglars and whatever. But, you know, you can have fun with your suspicion of humanity.
Yeah. And you can find out on the sneakers.
Yeah. So anyway, that was one thought, but I have others in that vein. I've got all sorts of stuff, books on crime and criminals and punishments. And I would think that kind of a grouch would find those books interesting. I would hope.
What if we also have a mom that is less grumpy? What would we get her?
Well, okay. So this is another very popular monkey's paw item, but I think this would be a really good, I don't know if you know the name, Ewell Gibbons. He was an American nature food writer in the 1960s, 70s. He was sort of the grandpa of the food foraging movement. So in the 60s, when people like discovered the idea of like just going out in the woods and finding edible stuff, he was the guy who introduced that idea to the world, really. And his most famous book is Stalking the Wild Asparagus. But he also did Stalking the Healthful Herbs, which is about, you know, obviously finding medicinal herbs in the woods, and Stalking the Blue-Eyed Scallop, which is a book about finding stuff on the beach. I'm going to be selling these three as a set. They're in the Field Guide edition from the early 70s, and, you know, they're pocket-sized paperbacks, so they're intended to be carried with you when you're out wandering on the beach or in the woods. If mom is an enthusiast for that sort of thing, for finding mushrooms or plants that nobody knew were edible or whatever, this is a great choice. And I will just say, by the way, Stalking the Wild Asparagus, I was in Washington, D.C. back in the summer, and I went to the Smithsonian Museum of American History, and there was a special food exhibit there. And this book was on display in the food exhibit because it was that influential. So it has good historical background as well. So
perfect. I'm sure my mom would like this. She always looks for plants whenever we're going for walks.
It seems like a no-brainer to me. But
and finally, the hardest person to shop for, if we have that one person in our lives who never likes any gifts, doesn't like Christmas, maybe doesn't need anything, what would we get them?
Well, that's a tough one, because that's the person I have a really hard time communicating with. I don't know. You know, the only thing that we sell in our shop, you know, how a lot of new bookstores, they sell like candles and mugs and little gewgaws and stuff to support their bookselling retail. The only thing that we sell that isn't a book or that isn't a printed item is these biological specimens. And I think for a guy like that, I would get him a scorpion and lucite. That might be, because who wouldn't want a scorpion and lucite?
Who would want that? Yeah. Even a grumpy person would appreciate that.
Yeah, so I'm completely giving up and dropping the ball on that one, but that's what these are doing here. These are here for the person who comes to the store and decides they don't like books, but who wouldn't like a bug in lucite, right? So,
Makes sense.
That's a guess. I could find a lot of books, but they won't like them. So.
No, that's a good shopping list. I think we're ready for Christmas now. So moving on from books, I have a few Christmassy holiday questions for you.
Okay.
One is, what is your favorite story set around the holiday season, around Christmas?
It's so unimaginative, but in my case, it's just absolutely true. I grew up with Dickens' Christmas Carol, and it's just the one story that I can't get beyond it. It's been so overworked in so many different media, and it's such a like kind of cultural trope. But you know, I practically cry when I read that story. So I would have to say that it's kind of obvious, but it still gets me. So sorry, I apologize for my trite decision there, but that's what I would have to pick.
It's a good classic, strong classic. What is your favorite thing to do at Christmas time?
Well, if you mean, do you mean mine personally, or do you mean mine in the shop?
You can choose. It can be either.
Okay, well, I can tell you in the shop, I didn't mention this before, but I don't know if this is a solid established tradition in the antiquarian book trade, but I feel it ought to be. And also please don't tell the government or the officials about this, but I keep a bottle of brandy behind the counter, and all the customers that I know really well, I offer them a tipple, while they're shopping. That is a tradition that I just love. And it's of course, in moralistic Canada, that's highly illegal, but fuck them, we'll just have a drink at Christmas time. So I really like the day when somebody I have, who's been a longtime customer and understands the tradition comes in and I can pour him a drink. I find that very, very gratifying.
I mean, it is very cold at Christmas.
It is. A glass of brandy, if you come off the street, I mean, see, look at all the snow out there.
Exactly. You could say you're doing it for health reasons, you know, if anyone says anything. Is there anything about Christmas that you don't like that really gets to you in a bad way?
Well, I mean, again, I'll limit it to the shop rather than to my, you know, personal views, because I could probably talk at length about those too. But in the store, you know, because it is a season of gift shopping, we get a lot of people maybe who don't come in all year, or who only come in, you know, at the holidays, or who have never come in before and don't really know how our business works. One thing that really bugs me is the people who come in and they'll ask us for something that there's just no way, you know, do you have any signed Jane Austen? It's like, are you kidding me? Like the rarity of such an item, it's completely insane, you know? And I mean, that might be an extreme example, but they'll ask us for stuff that there's just no way I can find. I mean, they're just books that are too obscure, too rare, too valuable. And even if I had them, if you come and ask me for that on the 23rd of December, well, if I did have it, it sold, you know, a week or two ago, and that's fine. They can ask and I can tell them, no, we don't have that. But then if they act put out, like, well, why don't you? Well, then I just kind of feel like you're being a little bit unfair to us. You know, we're doing our best here trying to find all this obscure, you know, hard to find stuff. And please, like, we tried. Okay. You know, so that's one. And I mean, I guess another thing that happens is it'll be starting to happen right now. People who come in, we witness this every year. There are people who are sort of doing exploratory, like pre-shopping, and they come in and they look around for an hour and then they don't buy anything. And they sort of, you hear them whispering, they're like, well, okay, we're going to go check somewhere else and then we'll come back. And of course they never come back. Or in the rare event that they do come back, they come back and they say, oh, well, there was a cookbook here 2 weeks ago. You know, where is it? Well, of course, well, it sold, and because everything is sort of one of a kind, I don't have a replacement for it. And then I have to, you know, deal with their disappointment. So but in general, it's a great time of year. Those are small difficulties. So.
What book are you going to be reading over the holidays? If you have some time off, what are you going to be looking forward to reading?
The last year and a half, I have made a very deep dive into the works of George Simenon, and I've read a lot of Maigret novels.
Okay.
That's my ideal escape reading for some reason in the last year or two. I recently bought the collection from a fellow brought in his dad's, you know, his deceased father's Simenon collection, and it's like an entire box full of Maigret paperbacks. At this point, I've read many of them, but I'm going to root through that box and figure out which ones I have not yet read. And that would be my sitting in my in-laws' house on Boxing Day with my feet up kind of read. So hopefully I will find a couple there that I haven't read yet. He was very prolific, so I'm convinced that there are some I haven't yet seen.
Good.
And they're in that box.
Good plan for Christmas. How many days do you have off for the holidays?
I will probably be out for a few days, you know, for what we call Boxing Week, like Christmas Day and then Boxing Day, and then maybe a day or two after. I usually have somebody else cover the store those days, but we're open during that time. Not Christmas Day, but we're open 26, 27, whatever, in December. But I'll take a little time off there. But I like it in here at this time of year. My family finds that irritating, I'm sure, because I'm away from home. But it's exciting, and hopefully we make enough sales that then can continue doing the business for another year.
It's a good time for retail, yeah, and you don't want to miss too much of it. I have just one final question. So
okay.
I mentioned before that I'll be giving birth soon. And so it'll be the first Christmas for my little girl. So I'm wondering if you could recommend a story that I should definitely read to her. She won't understand it anyway, so it can be kind of weird too. But
yeah.
What do you think I should read?
Oh my gosh. This was the one thing that I didn't prepare for. And I got to say, like, in my life, some of my most gratifying experiences were reading to my kids. You would think I would have something good at hand, but I can give you one. This is something you will not find outside of Canada, probably. So I'm telling you about something that is not very much help to you, because I don't know how you'll ever track a copy of this down. But there is a Toronto poet named Dennis Lee.
Okay.
He was a kind of I guess, 60s, 70s, local poet in Toronto. And he wrote a lot of sort of prominent Canadian adult poetry. But it turns out what he's really going to be remembered for is his children's poetry. And he wrote these beautiful, absurdist, whimsical, rhythmic, and beautiful sounding absurdist poems for children. Like, here's a copy of Jelly Belly. That was one, that was not his first one. I can't remember what the other crazy titles were, but they're just beautiful. They're beautiful poems, wistful, humorous, and they just sound good. So I remember reading those to my kids when they were little, not Christmas oriented necessarily, but just a good read for a small child. The beauty of it is because he is also like a really interesting guy and a poet for adults and everything, the work is actually good enough that you enjoy it while you're reading it.
Oh, that's
an important thing with children's book is, you know, it's not good to read something that is like so infantile that you don't enjoy it also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See if you can track down the work of Dennis Lee. He should be more widely known, but you know, pigeonholed as a Canadian poet, he probably doesn't get heard from much in the larger world.
Yeah, I just looked it up now and he has great titles like Garbage Delight, Bubblegum Delicious.
Garbage Delight is the best. That's the best one.
Okay, I'll try to track that down. Thank you. That's a good suggestion.
Sure.
Well, I hope the Monkey Spot does great this season, this holiday season. And I hope the buzz in the shop is really great and you get to enjoy that. And yeah,
thanks
for coming back to Gut Books. This is great.
Well, thank you so much. And best of luck with your Christmas present this year. You're going to have your hands full, but
thank you.
Congratulations. It's such great news. You'll have a wonderful holiday, I'm sure.
I hope you enjoyed this episode in our Christmas Advent calendar. Join me again on Friday, December 10th, for a conversation with our very first guest from season one, Sean Buthel, author of several books about being a bookseller and the owner of Wigtown, Scotland's The Bookshop. Until then, sit back, relax, and enjoy a good book.